If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret, searching for the sound. This is the Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman.
Before we get to today's show, I wanted to tell you all about the new SoundStream app. It is the new home for all things sound podcast, and now you're able to listen to the perfect blend of music you'd expect from us 24/7. Jam bands and more, much more. New episodes of the podcast arrive at least 3 times a week, and now you can listen to your favorite artists and bands all the time in a perfect music stream. Just hit the play button and away you go. You'll be boogieing in no time. You can make requests, offer shoutouts, and even let us know when your birthday is, all from the SoundStream app. Get the app at thesoundstream.com or in the Apple or Google Play Store. The show starts now.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Paper Cut from Real Estate's latest album, The Main Thing, featuring Sylvan Esso on vocal harmonies. We've been following the decade-long career of Real Estate since the beginning. Now in their 10th year, they recently released their fifth album, The Main Thing. The album comes at a time when the band, previously in personnel flux, has solidified their lineup and are set for a new beginning of sorts. It's always hard as a band to figure out where they want to go sonically as they mature as an act, if the circumstances afford them that opportunity. The Main Thing, while still rooted in poppy hooks, vocal harmonies, and solid songwriting, does denote a new kind of sound for the band. So we caught up with Martin Courtney and Alex Bleeker of Real Estate to talk about the new album, a few interesting projects, and a whole lot more. Our conversation started when I asked Martin about recording this fifth record and wondered if the band did indeed feel like it was time for a bit of a change.
I think 10 years in, yeah, that was the whole sort of mindset that we had going into it was like, how can we make this interesting and how can we make something that feels like, you know, new for us, because we've made, like you said, this is our fifth record. So, you know, we've made records in studios before. So, we didn't want to go into it kind of going through the motions, I guess, you know, not that it ever really felt that way in the past, but I think this time in particular, it just felt important to make something that felt like maybe we were breaking the mold a little bit for ourselves because, I mean, I think also that kind of the overarching circumstances of kind of where we found ourselves at that point. And for me, like kind of, my life has changed a whole lot since we started this band. And, I'm kind of, you know, I never really thought that I'd still be doing it 10 years later. So, kind of, you know, reconciling, making music and being in a band and writing songs with, you know, living, you know, being a dad of, you know, and living a kind of normal domestic life and also living in a world where Donald Trump is president and things seem to be spiraling out of control and just not wanting to make something that felt, you know, just like just another pop record. You know, we wanted to make something that felt substantial. We felt like it was kind of rising to kind of the feelings that we were having at that moment.
Yeah, and if I might just piggyback off that a little bit, I think we were at a pretty, like, you know, tender place as a band going into making this record. You know, we've been a band 12 years now and 10 when we were starting to make it. And I think there's just a certain reality. A lot of our peers had moved on from making music, like Real Estate. We've been around for a while, which obviously is amazing to us and has all these benefits, even especially now, actually, you know, speaking a little bit about current events, I think we're just actually pretty grateful to be a bit established and have established a bit of a fan base. But, you know, it was definitely a different world then than it is now. We were making that record and we were feeling a little bit of that thing of transitioning from being like, the cool, like, what do you have if you're not the new trendy band anymore? And it feels almost harder to transition being new to why are you still around, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it just felt so vital for us personally and artistically to not repeat ourselves, to make something, you know, that was sort of different and vibrant in a new way that would keep us going and would also keep people coming back to another Real Estate record. We made four that we thought were pretty good. Why make the same one again? What's the point of that? And if I may just speak, you know, toot Martin's horn a little bit because he won't do it for himself. I think if you dive into the record lyrically, it addresses a lot of those themes of uncertainty, both for us as a band, but also us as individuals in an ever-changing world. And I think it goes deeper personally into feelings of sort of that we all can relate to, you know, anxiety, fear, and doubt, and, you know, wondering what it means to pursue something artistic in a world where it feels like many weighty things are going on. And I think, you know, all those things sort of ring even more meaningful now than when he wrote them down. So that's another aspect of things.
Martin, you continue to write, be the primary songwriter in this band. I mean, is that, has that, that's always been the case. Is it about writing material, demoing material, and bringing it to everybody and just having them play their parts? How does that all work at this point?
I mean, for the most part, the songs are, parts, pieces of songs. Like I'll have the chord progression, what constitutes a song that I will send to the band is like generally, I try to have vocals on there, but it's generally a guitar, at least a chord progression, verse, chorus, whatever, a structure.
Yeah.
Vocals, and then maybe more stuff if, I feel inspired, if the guitar part that I'm writing feels like it needs another guitar part or whatever, like I'll have, it's a spectrum, from bare bones to fully fleshed out, depending on how much fun I'm having that day. But, for the most part, on this record in particular, I think, mostly 'cause I wanted to keep moving and keep writing. And also, we were separated geographically as a band. Alex is out in California, I'm in New York, Julian's in Wisconsin. So we're all, we're doing this at least up until we're able to get together for that initial rehearsal period. We're doing it via email, or, I'm sending ideas around and just being like, just, listen to this and see if you have any ideas. So, most of these songs for this record were more, bare bones, mostly vocals and guitar with a couple exceptions, but yeah. At least the ones that I wrote, and Julian wrote a song on this record as well, which was a new thing for us.
When we're, writing together, usually Martin is the main songwriter, and every once in a while it's somebody else, whether it be Julian or on this record Matt Coleman for the first time, it's been myself a couple of times in the past. That person will bring the song to the band, and then the band kind of hacks away at it. It's like a rough piece of marble. And the way we've been doing that, being separated, is Martin obviously does this, we do things over email and we hear things and we come in with ideas, but also we've been doing these sessions on the last two records that I really enjoy, where we just get together in physical space. We all come together near Martin, the band rents a house, and we have a rehearsal space, and we get in there and we work out these songs, which quite literally means we play them over and over and over again and think of different ideas, mm-hmm. until they sort of form into what you end up hearing on the record, more or less, But it's really cool. That part of the process is pretty collaborative, because we'll take this beautiful seed of something that Martin has started, and then it's like, well, what if there's like a totally different drum beat, for example? That's like the thing that pops in my mind that can alter a song the most. Jackson will be like, yeah, I'm gonna play like a 70s like disco soul thing, on Paper Cup, yeah. under this song that sounded a little bit like a different kind of pop song before that, and it's just like, oh shit, what happened? And then suddenly Julian's guitar part just makes sense, because it's like, oh yeah, I'm doing this like Walter Becker Steely Dan thing over that,
Yeah.
And so that's like a part of the process that I've come to really enjoy. It's like pre-studio work, we get in together and we kind of like form these songs.
Yeah, that's actually what I yeah, I forgot to mention. Basically, that's like, that was a big part of this record. I think a lot of those songs that I sent around to the band ended up in very vastly different form, from what I sent in the initial email to what ended up on the record. Like we really did some hacking and chopping.
Are you very precious about that? Or is it something that if everybody in the band feels that that's what the song requires, that's what you do? Or are you like, well, no, this is...
I think I used to be more, and I've gotten, more trusting of the collaborative process, and because it's lent such good results, that it's fun now to see where things can go. I think it also depends on the song. Like I think actually, when I say like some songs I'll send just like, skeletal demos, and other songs will be more fleshed out. I think that's kind of why I try to keep them more skeletal now, because if I if I go too far in the fleshing out process, if I record a bass part and a guitar, and a lead guitar part, you know, even if I'm just doing it, you know, I'm just like, oh, this is just an idea, you know, take it or leave it. I'll end up with that stuck in my head as like, this is the way the song sounds, you know? And so right. if I keep it more open from the beginning, then I don't end up with these kind of like preconceived notions of how the song is supposed to sound, which is more fun anyway.
Everything old is new again, even though, you know, you were attempting to maybe reset yourselves 10 years in or 5 records in. Kevin McMahon joined you at the wheel and produced this record. How much did Kevin realize that you wanted to take a bit of a right turn from real estate, and how helpfully was he in sort of accommodating that request?
I mean, I think honestly, like I had done a couple sessions with him before this record, working on like a separate project, and we've had been having these conversations kind of about what, you know, I was talking to you about initially, you know, about where my head was at going into this record, and he just seemed like he was really on the level with me there, you know, and even, you know, I've known him, Alex and I have both known him since we were, you know, 18 years old, since we were, you know, really young, and he's, you know, a bit older than us. But like, I think, you know, we were just connecting in that way where like, I think he was also feeling similar feelings, you know, for himself. And then also knowing us for so long and having worked with us in the past on a kind of a pivotal record for us. Like, I think he had a really good sense of like, you know, our career arc, you know, so to speak, right. Or like where, you know, where we could go or where we were hoping to go or like what we needed at that moment. I think it did feel kind of like a leap going back to him, but I was happy that, you know, Alex in particular was interested in going there. Like I kind of wasn't sure if it was how the initial suggestion was going to go over.
Well, what's really funny is even before we had a producer lined up, all the conversation in the band was, we got to work with somebody who's going to push us. We got to do something that's new. We got to like make a record that, you know, it has elements that we haven't incorporated before that might surprise some people. And then, so it feels like this sort of funny contradiction to go with somebody that we worked with before that so well, that produced arguably our most beloved record, definitely one of our most beloved records.
For sure.
And but I think there's something with that familiarity that allowed us to dispense with the politeness that you have when you're working with somebody new and you're basically meeting them in the studio, which is the way it's been for the other producers we've worked with. Mm-hmm. You know, there is a little bit of like there has been, you know, like, well, what do you guys think? Or like, yeah, that's cool. I mean, less so on in mind, our producer Cole had a heavier hand, but even so, we were meeting and becoming friends and you want a good vibe. And with Kevin, that relationship was not really in question. And he's a very particular guy. And it allowed, because he knows us and he knows where we're coming from and he knows we don't want to make the record that we made with him before, mm-hmm. he was able to be like, you know, not in these words, but like, fuck you, no. Right. You know, like with like his overall vibe, you know, and he was able to step in there and not, there was like, we're friends. I don't mean to suggest it wasn't friendly, but when it came to like creative discussions or even disagreements, he was not afraid to voice his opinion, which I think when you're trying to make a, push yourself and make a better record, that's an important quality to have in a producer.
It's the irony of the title, and I think it's taken from Roxy Music record from Avalon. Am I right with that? The main thing is it's a tune off of Avalon, right? That was their last record, and this is sort of a rebirth for you guys. So that's funny. That what made you think of Roxy Music? Are you guys into that? Into that band? And
I hadn't thought of that. definitely was not intended. But yeah, no.
The Roxy, you know, Music was intended. Just no, not that.
That wasn't yet. No, we weren't intending to like evoke, you know, the last album.
No, thing. No, but, I appreciate that. Yeah, it's yeah, irony. But,
yeah, but No, I was definitely listening to that record, very early on. It's just an incredible sounding album. I think just going into this, making this album, was kind of like a goalpost in terms of just like trying to make something that, you know, could even approach that level of production, basically. Like that to me, at least, like that's just such a well-crafted record that you can listen to from front to back, you know. So I ended up like calling, you know, the name of the record is The Main Thing, and there's a song on the album called The Main Thing, and you know, that phrase is more like it has meaning within the song. I mean, it is kind of like a reference to Roxy Music, you know, insofar as like I probably wouldn't have thought of that phrase if I didn't know about that song. Mm-hmm. And I definitely was like, that's a really cool song and that's a really cool record, so it's not a bad thing to like, you know, evoke that, you know, album in people's minds, and it's fun to right. to do stuff like that. But I guess what I'm saying is like the name of the song or the name of the album is more like reflecting the song. I don't know.
I get it.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, totally.
We almost called this album Special Album, because that's the true story. Like, we were like a hair's breadth away from calling it Special Album because we couldn't figure out what to call it. And we were like, we feel like this album is special. We're in a special place. It's a special rebirth for us. Like, Special Album. And we all kind of laughed and we're like, honestly though, like maybe just going on the nose, like that's the thing. And ultimately, you know, it didn't happen, but the main thing, we felt like that song and the message of that song encapsulated how we felt about the record and the process of making the record in general the most, you know, which was the sort of central theme or question that we were feeling was, what is the point of making this record? And is it sort of socially, financially responsible to continue to make art during these sort of trying times when you feel like you have all these other responsibilities and fears and anxieties piling up, and you know, how else can I be servicing the world or myself? And sort of the question is answered in that song by Martin, which is like, the main thing is to be true to yourself and your passion, and that show that as an example for people that you love, and make something and do something that you love, and that's an important path to follow, just almost as important or equally as important or more important than any other path. And we discovered that through the making of the record. We're like, you know, it sort of reinvigorated us, reinvented us. And it was kind of staring us in the face for months that was like kind of the nucleus of the message of the record. And it almost means the same thing as Special Album. You know, like the record itself is, this is the main thing, you know, and what does the main thing mean?
I'm just going to throw out some songs, if you don't mind, because we've spent a lot of time sort of shaping the conversation. Paper Cup is really that existential crisis that you came to, I think, in many ways represents what this album was about. But what's interesting is it is that detour with the disco strings and, you know, the soft rock solos and all of that. You're trying on new fits. I'm on the same bullshit. But it's not the same bullshit. It's not the same thing, Martin. It is very different from other songs from Real Estate. I mean, you have a female singer doing harmonies. It's such a departure. How did you know that this song fit on this thing? Because it was such a departure? Is that why it fits so well?
Yeah, I mean, well, we just felt like it was a really strong song. You know, I think going into it, like, you know, talking about those initial sessions where we were like shaping the songs and making them into, you know, getting them ready for the studio, like from that moment, even in an earlier, because the song ended up kind of morphing. We recorded an earlier version of it that we were like, that we know that this could be better than it is. And we actually went back and reshaped it again. And then, you know, basically sped it up and, you know, get, you know, whatever, tweaked it a bit to, but yeah, even from that early version of it, we just kind of knew it felt like, you know, it was exciting for us. And it felt like something, you know, the type of song that would withstand a certain amount of experimentation from us. So we were, you know, we decided to kind of throw all of our ideas at it. And I think once we had the kind of the initial idea that, you know, this kind of the disco sort of drum beat and the whatever, the bass line in there, and you know, it just kind of started to coalesce. And at that point, certain other decisions almost were made for us, like we should put some strings in here, you know, like it kind of, I feel like this song would benefit from like a really cool string part. And like Alex had this idea for like a really cool, like call and response, you know, backup vocal thing. Like, you know, the initial idea was like falsetto or something, like, you know, he was like, you know, almost like a, you know, like a backup, like chorus or something, you know, or whatever. I don't remember exactly what he said, but at a certain point I was trying to sing it falsetto, and I was just like, we should really just get an actual female singer on this song, you know. And all those ideas, that like, as obvious as that sounds, like we'd never done anything like that before. Even the idea of having strings, like I've worked with strings on a solo record, but like it almost like doesn't cross your mind to do it with Real Estate, because Real Estate is a band and it's the five of us, and every sound on our records come from the five of us. And like, so that, you know, crossing that bridge into bringing, you know, other musicians into the studio or, you know, into the process with us was actually like a big step for us, and was strongly encouraged by Kevin. So yeah, it was kind of all in the interest of, like kind of pushing ourselves in new directions and.
Well, also a but is also that idea of pushing you in different directions, because it was primarily written and sung by Julian Lynch, which is very different for you guys. Plus, he's the new guy in the band. So that must have been strangely fresh, too, to have somebody write a song. Martin, how comfortable were you with that? Were you, like, again... you know, we mentioned it off the top about being precious about your own music, but also being precious about being the songwriter in the band. Was that a big leap of faith for you? Or did you think that what Julian brought to the table was kind of worthy of Real Estate?
Yeah. I mean, it didn't feel like a leap for like a number of reasons. I mean, first of all, like I've written the majority of the songs, you know, that ended up being Real Estate songs, but I've never been the sole songwriter in this band. And, you know, Alex has written songs in the past, and it's always been a collaborative effort, even with my own songs. So like that part of it, it felt very natural, and it was exciting to me. Like, I'm always like, you know, if anybody has any ideas, like, you know, for the most part in the past, it's been Alex, you know, who also writes songs and has, you know, has things to bring to the table. But, you know, bringing Julian into the band, he is, I guess, the newest band member, but at this point he's been in the band, you know, for a few years, and he played on our previous record, although he came into that process kind of, you know, a quarter of the way through it. You know, it was still early on, but like we had already kind of started working on that record. This is the first record he like has been with us from the beginning. He's toured with us for the past few years, not to mention the fact that we've known him, you know, since middle school. Alex and I have, you know, we grew up with him, and we've always respected him as like an amazing songwriter. You know, he was the guy in high school that wrote the incredible songs, and we were always like, Julian's the one. He's gonna, you know, we're gonna be in, you know, his band one day.
It's very weirdly familiar, because the first band that we were in, he was the songwriter, you know, and the first tour we ever went on, it was playing Julian's music. And the first sort of like, we were in college and we're like, we're going to try to make an album. It was Julian's stuff. So it's kind of a natural position for us to fall back into, but definitely a different sound for Real Estate, a different vibe of song, which I think, you know, maybe in earlier iterations, we might've been like, I don't know, does this fit, you know? But, you know, now we're at a, whoa, what's going on there? And now we're at a point where like the more different areas we can explore, the better.
Yeah. You know?
And I think also when I reflect on it, most, if not all of my favorite bands have multiple songwriters and multiple voices coming through. I mean, if you look at, you know, Touchstones for us personally, like the Feelies or Yola Tango, multiple songwriters. And then you just go on up to say you know, bands that some people have heard of, like the Beatles or the Grateful Dead, you know.
Marginal at best.
It's like, it's not abnormal. It's actually quite refreshing. And some of the bands that are most influential on us do have multiple songwriters.
Right, right. Yeah, it is so different, right? It's this proggy ballad, the wah-wah, like there's a lot going on. But it's an important subject too to tackle, especially given the BS that's going on in the White House and everything and climate change. So it's good on you guys for putting it out. The other track I think that I wanted to talk about was Gone. And again, well, there's this the hook, the guitar over that, you know, bass, that haunting kind of sound reoccurs not just on the song multiple times, but it has reoccurred in my mind multiple times. Martin, was that something that you kind of pollinated and brought to bear, the aside from the lyrics of the song, just the way it was put together?
Yeah, like that initial demo that I sent, like that song I think was initially, you know, guitar, drum machine, and bass guitar. And I felt that it was, I also had it stuck in my head a lot. You know, when I initially wrote it, I was like, oh, this one's kind of, it's got that kind of like bounciness to it. But it's also kind of dark, and it felt different for me in a way that I was excited about it. That's another one that I think we were all like, you know, kind of excited about going into the recording of it. I don't know. I mean, what was the question again? Sorry.
Oh, just if you came up with that hook, like that not hook necessarily, but just that bass line
I mean, the bass line to me, it's funny how, yeah, it almost feels built around the bass line, but it's actually the bass that's, you know, like, I mean, obviously I wrote the guitar part first, and mm-hmm. the bass is really just following that chord progression. But something about it, like, the bass really kind of, you know, I don't know, sticks out. Sounds good on that song. It was a contender
for first single on the record. You know, like we felt special about that song as well. And, you know, like it was also showcasing a different direction for us.
Right.
You know, but also, yeah, I don't know. I think we're going to look for ways to highlight it actually in the not too distant future. So look out for that.
Which brings us to an obvious question. You have a rabid fan base who love real estate as you guys were. And that isn't to say that you won't still play those songs. It's 80% of your canon at this point, or 90% of your canon. But how has the fan base taken to these songs, either live or commentary on Facebook after hearing the record and stuff like that? How have you felt about how the fans have taken to the record?
I think that it's kind of interesting. I for one, you know, I will not too proud to admit that we check in on that stuff from time to time. You know, we scope our Reddit, our subreddit, and see what people are even just, I mean, sometimes people are just commenting directly on posts that we make, like on Instagram or something. So obviously we see that. And I am certainly happy that there is a debate going on at all. And what I have sort of seen is that there are a lot of people who recognize that we've taken new steps for the band on this record and are super psyched and are digging it. And that means that we're still alive and we're still here and we're vibrant and we're not playing by numbers, going through the motions. Like it's a sign of any band's health, I think, if you're trying to push in new directions and not just repeating yourself. And I have found that the majority of our big fans and a lot of people have really responded to that and recognize that. And then you're always going to have, as you know, a percentage of fans like I am myself, for many other bands, were like, well, the first two records were the best and fuck all this shit, what happened?
Yeah.
But you know, it's like, that is part of the lineage of any band that's been around for a while. So I'm psyched. And then you got other people coming back like, no way, this is the best one yet. It's worthy of debate. And we have fans that are engaging with the music on that level. That is just like, that's it, right? What else can you hope for? But I will say that I think, you know, we are an indie rock band, but we're somewhat unique in that category in that we do take our songs to different places live than they end up on the records. And we sort of have always prided ourselves on letting songs evolve in the live sphere. And so we have done some performing of many of these songs live over the past couple of years, but I'm really looking forward to when we can eventually bring these out on the road and let them stretch out and let fans engage with them on that level, because I think some of the songs on the record in particular are really going to occupy a different space at the live show than they even do on the record. And I'm excited for that to grow, you know.
These songs haven't, yeah, they haven't even like fulfilled their life cycle yet. You know, like the final stage is like you put them on the record and then the fans, you know, hopefully, you know, we're lucky enough to have people come to our shows who have listened to the records and who are familiar with the songs. And then it's like you get to that next level where you're able to get the feedback from the audience and you know, from each other, and take the songs to hopefully new places, which is what we've done with all of our previous records.
Sometimes, you know, the audience can instruct us on what is resonating. Often, what is resonating? You know, we think certain songs are going to resonate, and then all of a sudden, like, one or two songs after the record come out, get these huge live responses. You know, I think, like, in mind, I can think of the song Saturday, which just, we always thought it was a good song, and we dug it, but it's definitely become, like, a fan favorite live. You know, and it's just like, okay, cool. Well, that's one we could, because, you know, when we're structuring sets, we think about, like, well, what can we do to like get exploratory in this section of the set? Okay, they've maybe been patient with us, like jamming a little bit. Let's like give them a poppy one that everyone's going to be really happy to hear. And like we learn from going to the shows and playing what those songs are,
right,
from the fans. It's a totally symbiotic kind of relationship.
Conveniently, Quarantouring has come out, and it's an app that lets your fans listen to your music in a virtual reality kind of way, like, and hear all this. How did that come about, and how did you put it together? Did you put it together specifically? Well, you didn't know that this was coming, but how convenient that this was coming and you had this Quarantouring app ready to go.
Plandemic, man.
Plandemic.
We're going to be part of some sort of Alex Jones conspiracy theory. Like, yeah, like, you guys could have known, you know.
No, we filmed that back in December. We went to a recording studio and filmed ourselves, you know, performing in front of a green screen with the intention of it being a fun, like, piece of content, quote unquote.
Right.
You know, we're going to have this record come out. We're going to go on tour. You know, we're going to want to, you know, promote the tour. And also, you know, as kind of a winking, you know, nod to all the, like, every time you announce tour dates and, you know, inevitably someone, you know, is, you know, come to Juneau, Alaska, or come to whatever, come to anywhere, you know, come to this city, any city that isn't mentioned in the tour dates. So, you know, we were like, all right, this is our chance to play everywhere in the world at once. You know, we're playing in your kitchen, we're playing in your living room, you know, we're playing in your bathroom. Like, that's what it was supposed to be. And that's, I guess, what it still is. But now that we had to cancel tour and all this stuff that's happening in the world, it felt like this weird serendipitous thing, though, you know, not necessarily in a good way. But it felt like a thing that we had that we did. There was discussion as to whether or not, like, you know, should we even put this out? Does it feel like, you know, we're making light of it? But you gotta kind of like find your joy where you can. And for us, it felt like, you know, a nice consolation prize, hopefully, you know, for us and for our fans to be able to put something out, some form of a live performance for people, you know, hopefully to, you know, whatever. I mean, it's also just like a pretty cool piece of technology, I think. Like, I'm pretty psyched that it actually exists and that it works. For most people, I guess you need to have like an up to date phone or something for it to work. But yeah, it's kind of a cool thing.
I will say that, just a funny story, piggybacking real quick on that. You always say, put out like, hey, we're playing so and so, and somebody on the internet inevitably comments like, come to this city. And literally, it was like 6 months ago, someone was like, come to Chicago. And we're like, we are playing in Chicago tonight at 7 o'clock. And they're like, oh damn, I'll be there.
Before I get to my last kind of bit, I do want to just finish up with the record and touring. And obviously you can't tour right now. And who knows when you'll be able to tour again. Is there more music to be made? I mean, it's a ridiculous question to ask given that this record just came out, but are there more tunes? Is the plan to record more? I mean, you're in sort of different places right now, but is the plan to record more and then go out eventually? Or are you going to go out and record after? Like, what's the album cycle here? Because if things are sort of upside down anyway.
I mean, it feels like we are going to, you know, just based on the arc of what this thing is looking like, we're probably not going to be playing live, or we'll probably be able to be together in a room, the five of us, before we're going to be able to like actually have a, whatever, 1,000 people in a room with us, that's going to be harder to actually put concerts on for a while, but hopefully we'll be able to jam, together in the not too distant future. But, once that's possible, we are talking about hopefully being able to go into a studio and, make another record. And maybe by the time we go on tour, we'll be able to have, two records for people to hear, hear songs from for the first time. But we are kind of exploring right now, the idea of like sending demos around and kind of fleshing out songs remotely, which is something we've never done before, which surprising, because like I don't know, things that seem in the past 2 months have become seem really simple, like even stuff like this video chatting to do interviews, which is like we should have always been doing, even obviously this is like an audio interview, so we don't need to see you.
Yeah.
But it's kind of nice, to have that. It just helps with the conversation, to have a more real conversation.
Totally.
So anyway, stuff like that, the technology for this has existed for a long time. So, and similarly, we've been able to, work on songs remotely for a long time, but now, it always seemed like, oh, like that's too hard or like whatever, but it's actually really simple, I think. And, it could be kind of productive.
We have a Zoom call scheduled right after this one with the rest of the band to talk about how we're going to start co-writing the next record.
Do you want me to stick around for that? Or
yeah. You want to be like an in virtual producer,
Yeah, no, not, I don't think that's, on the lighter side of things. There's an article from 2015, Why the Grateful Dead Still Matter. And it was around the time of, the reunion show, the 50th anniversary reunion show. And I went to the shows in Chicago. I can only assume that you went to the shows out west, Alex.
I was in Chicago.
Oh, you were in Chicago? Okay, great.
Yep.
I just feel like I was constantly walking around Soldier Field. Anyway, the Grateful Dead, even 5 years later from when people were wondering why they still mattered, still matter. And you're ahead, like you're a deadhead. There are many friends of yours, like Ira Kaplan and Lee Rinaldo and other, the guys from The National. A lot of indie music musicians are deadheads. Deadheads first before, the other, or were deadheads before they started making their own music. I came across you guys playing at the Live Out There sessions, the tribute to Garcia and Hunter. And I already know the answer that Alex, the big deadhead, but what struck me was, Martin, your version of Stella Blue. Because I'm not sure you knew how precious that song is to deadheads, and specifically Jerry singing that song, but you do such a great job. How did you choose Stella Blue as your contribution to that set?
Yeah, first of all, if I had known that it was, Alex didn't warn me. I guess he, in a way.
I was excited when you said you were going to do it, and I was of course,
I am a fan of the Grateful Dead, but I guess, there's such a depth you know, that you can plumb with that band that I can't call myself ahead, but I do. I love their music and I love their albums. And that song, you know, I knew I wanted to participate in this thing cause it seemed really fun. And I like the idea of, whatever and things like that, you know, those tribute albums, compilations, and that was like a kind of a new version of that is always kind of a fun thing to do. But yeah, a lot of their songs felt kind of inaccessible for me, like just on a musical level. Like I just didn't know how I would have given it my own, whatever, how I could attack it. So that one just felt like one that was possible for me to attempt, I guess, and to maybe pull off. So yeah, I just, it's a beautiful song. It just felt like something that I might be able to do.
And on the other side of things, Alex, Dupree's Diamond Blues is a fun song. And you have a lot of fun with it sitting out by the Pacific Ocean on a rug, which I totally dug. How did you choose Dupree's for your song?
Yeah, sort of on the flip side of what Martin was saying, I've got a lot of experience playing Dead songs. You know, I've been in several Grateful Dead tribute projects and been a part of different, you know, one-off pop-up tribute nights and things. And I had never done Dupree's, largely, I think, because the band didn't do it that much live. You know, there are a couple iconic versions that we all, but the community can think of and point to. But I think in the sort of tribute live show recreation vein, I've more eagerly tackled things that the band often played live to give people that experience of, you know, like being at some version of a Dead show.
Right.
And, but I had friends who always said like, hey, that song's in your range and Dupree's would be a cool one for your vibe. And I wound up, on a tribute night for an Oxymoxoa anniversary show with a lot of great players in San Francisco. And they kind of, you know, it was kind of like the greatest Grateful Dead karaoke you could imagine.
Yeah.
Someone from that band suggested that I come and sing Dupree's Diamond Blues. And so I learned it for that and had a great time singing it and felt, lo and behold, this is a good fit for me. And so that was kind of in the back of my mind. And similar to Martin, I thought I could do, because I was all alone making that cover, you know, because it was recent. And I thought I could give it a cool treatment, you know, a cool sort of psychedelic spin on it. And it was something that I could do like home recorded that could sound really good. And it's also just like, yeah, sort of like a touch more obscure of a Dead song. And I kind of wanted to nod to all the heads that would be watching like, hey, you know, I'm a big fan. And a bunch of things just came together that made it feel like the right fit for that performance.
You guys, you know, spent a lot of time in Brooklyn. And Alex, I'm curious, because you're a Deadhead and you live on the West Coast, what do you make of Joe Russo's Almost Dead, who have become kind of this, well, they're not a cover band by any stretch of the imagination. They are a tribute band. What do you make of J-Rad and kind of the explosion of this new wave of doing Grateful Dead music?
I think there's a loaded, I could talk about this in a whole separate podcast.
Yeah, for sure.
I'll say off the bat that I think Joe's great and he's a friend of mine and he's an incredible musician and we've actually played together once or twice, which you can find on YouTube, and playing Grateful Dead music with Joe, playing any music with Joe, but playing Grateful Dead music with Joe, he's instantly the leader of the band. Like it was like my band that night. And then Joe came on to guest and he was just like, I'm counting off. Like, here, you know, like, he's like, I got this. And he's incredible. And I think J-Rad is great. And I've seen them a number of times. And, you know, interesting sort of side note about Joe, he's from basically the exact same town as Martin and I. We grew up in the exact same part of Jersey. And he like took drum lessons at our local music store, which totally blew my mind to find out. But, you know, what's interesting about this new wave of people playing Dead music is I think like there was a weird, not that they haven't always been one of the more popular rock bands in American history, but there was sort of a stigma, you know, that was established maybe in the 80s, but that has been lifted. You know, finally, time has sort of, you know, because it'd be like, oh, you're either into punk or you're into the Dead and you can't be into both, you know. And now that this sort of social stigma has worn off, you're getting all these people, you know, like Ira and Lee that you mentioned, who are, you know, I know that Lee has been a Deadhead for a really long time, but it might have been unimaginable to think that somebody from Sonic Youth would like proudly steal your face, you know? So it's kind of like, now it's just like people who like music can no longer deny that this is great and important music from the last century. And all of a sudden it's like okay to out yourself, and that opened the door to all these people who hadn't even given it a try. And it's just like, oh, holy shit, this is great, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think that's part of what you're seeing with this new resurgence, is there's a whole wave of people like myself even who never got to see Jerry Garcia play, who and the music is meant to be seen live. It's like Shakespeare or Mozart or something. It's canonical and it's meant to be heard. And so I think there'll always be some version of Grateful Dead music being played, you know?
Love it. Love it. Thanks so much for taking the time. I know you, like you said, you have other things to do, other things that are more pressing. Certainly making your own music is one of those. Thanks so much for taking the time. Really appreciate it. Good luck. And we hope you won't get a text from you, when are you playing Toronto, and that night you're playing Toronto. I'll make sure I know when you guys.
Hopefully we'll be back there before long. I will say, just as a side note, one of my favorite places to play, truly. And we did a two-night stand at the Horseshoe recently.
Wow,
no,
great.
No repeats.
Well, what a great room. Well, we look forward to having you back here. And I know, I'm sure the guys that run the Horseshoe, knowing what their taste of music is like, I'm sure they're excited to have you back too. So hopefully we'll see you sooner than later. Good luck. And thanks for taking the time, guys. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Ira. Have a good one.
Thank you very much.
A lengthy conversation with two very interesting and knowledgeable musicians. Aside from real estate, these two indie music dudes have their ears to the ground, and like you and I, are always listening and searching for sounds that will soothe their souls as artists and continue to entertain their fans. We had a great time with Martin and Alex and can't thank them enough for spending lots of time with us. For more information on real estate and the main thing, visit realestatetheband.com. Before we leave you, have a listen to another great cut off of the main thing, also a butt. And then stick around for great two solo performances of Jerry Garcia, Robert Hunter tunes as Martin Courtney tackles Stella Blue and Alex Bleeker handles Dupree's Diamond Blues. Performances taken from a special Live From Out There tribute to Garcia and Hunter. Enjoy. Thank you.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. For more, visit thesoundpodcast.com.